I think only in Chicago, only in the Midwest, where we suffer through the weather through most of the year, would we want to know the exact second that summer begins. No accident, Wendy, that summer begins on Ryan Burrow's birthday. That just makes sense.
Well, it's
synchronicity right there.
Is it always the same day?
Ryan Burrow's birthday? Yeah.
No, I know that
it's always
is.
The same day.
The longest first day of summer, year. June 21st. Right? It's always June 21st,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Longest day of the year?
Yeah.
And it's always your birthday.
Yeah.
Always. Sometimes it's Father's Day. Not
it's
this
the
year.
Vernal wow. Equinox, which was, I think, Elvis's dad's name. Wasn't it? I think it was.
Vernon Presley.
Oh, that's what it was. It's the Vernon Presley equinox.
Well, that's happy summer to everybody.
Yes.
School officially out for Chicago Public Schools. Yes. Our kids have been out since the end of May.
Yeah.
But again, doesn't feel like summer yet. Today is gorgeous.
It was John Williams who was saying, I was going to say moaning, and he was kind of moaning, but he was also saying that whoever picked up the tab on summer should get their money back, because we've been, so far, 3 weeks in, we've been kind of ripped off.
Well, technically, we're not three weeks in.
I know, but June, your traditional June, is weather in the 70s and the 80s, and it's been really stormy and cold and windy and blustery. It's not the summer that we want. I know it's not technically summer yet until today, but it's not what we wanted.
Well,
it's not
the
what we bargained for.
Have completely shifted. I mean, 100% shifted.
Yep.
We're getting 80-degree days in September and sometimes mm-hmm. October.
Right.
Although, right. Did we have a bad winter? I never remember.
It was a pretty
polar
brutal winter.
Vortex.
Yeah.
Oh, that was this year?
Yes. Doing all the Jussie Smollett stuff, remember?
You don't remember that?
No, Jussie took away my hatred of the polar vortex.
Wow.
It was a good wag the dog to get me away from the polar. That was this year?
Yeah.
Wow.
End of July. End of January.
Oh,
end
yeah.
of July. I would believe
that's
that.
That's coming too. Yep.
There was a day, like, all right, so on its coldest day, I still remember, because I know people can't see this, but where we are, this building is roughly, would you say, 2.5 blocks from NBC Tower? That's where
longer.
I park, right? So normally on my trip from that parking lot to this building, I'll encounter 50 to 100 people easily. That day, I was the only goofball outside.
Were you
there was
bundled
nobody
up?
Else. Yeah. Oh, yes.
You had your mitten clips?
I had my mitten clips. Yes. I had glasses on, which were ridiculous because in weather that cold, they froze up immediately
yep.
and actually made the journey more dangerous.
Ski goggles for next year.
Ski goggles for sure next year.
Bennett yeah. Wake Knight and I went outside and we did all those experiments.
Oh,
do you
yeah.
remember that? We froze the T-shirt. We threw the water in the air.
Yeah,
we froze a banana.
You didn't lick a pole, though.
No,
well, everybody
that's
knows
the
outcome
one.
Of that.
It's just
like a building. You'd be
yeah.
stuck there
stupidity.
Till March.
Yes. Yes. That's the byproduct of the pole licking and freezing weather. It's just stupidity
polar
right now.
Polar vortex.
Yeah,
you should have done
wow.
it.
Too late.
Next year, I
I'll
hope
do
we
it
get
today.
Another one.
Let's go out and do it today, Ryan, see if anybody pays attention.
My licking things is usually kind of frowned upon.
What is up with us where we lick things?
I don't know.
I know babies, because they're just trying to figure things out, so they put everything in their mouth.
Right.
But
I lick my
adult.
Keyboard here in the newsroom, so no one
God.
Else uses it.
Somebody's licking the end of my French bread. You know that.
Well, you say that. No one can prove it.
Why is it exposed? Why aren't the bags long enough? Come on, Ganella.
Our friend Mike Toomey does a bit about Super Balls and how when you're a kid, I don't know if girls do this, but every guy in the world who's ever had a Super Ball will at some point put it in their mouth. And there's no reason for it at all.
And not
Zero
as a
reason.
Baby.
Not as a baby.
I've never put a Super Ball in my mouth.
Girls are too smart to do that. Every guy I've ever met has done it at some point. And then when you say that to girls, they go, wait, why would you do that? There's no answer.
Didn't you have an issue with your girls in a Super Ball?
Yeah, one of them almost choked on a Super Ball. Yes.
So most girls, except for one
except
of your
except for my daughter, Reese. Yeah.
Oh, that was Reese?
Reese, we went to Toys R Us.
I picked Kylie as the one.
Our deal at Toys R Us was, if the girls were good in Toys R Us, as we went toy shopping for me.
And they always were.
They are always good. They got to pick out something from the machines. You know, when you were leaving a grocery store. A lot of stores don't do that anymore, but when we were kids, every grocery store had 8 or 10 machines where you'd put in...
Like a gumball machine,
yeah,
but with toys.
With novelties,
yes.
With toys, right? So they each wanted a Super Ball. I got them one. And then in the car, as I was talking to them, I noticed that Kylie had answered all the questions and Reese hadn't answered a single question I had asked. So I looked in the rearview mirror and she's laying back in a strange color, a color that Reese normally isn't. And I pulled over quickly and she had taken the Super Bowl I gave her and she was chewing on it and it blocked her windpipe.
It slipped down there because they get slippery when they get wet.
Oh, oh.
That's why Jon Bon Jovi wrote that song.
Right.
Slippery when wet.
Right. So after saving her, after pulling off to the side of the road and gouging the ball out and having them sign some papers saying that mom will never hear of this, girl, we have to stop by a notary public to get these stamped because your mom can never hear about this, ever.
And how long afterwards did Terry find out?
Kylie explained to her that day that there was an incident in the car. She didn't say incident because she was a little kid.
Was she grounded then?
No, it would have been. It would have all been on me. It would have all been. I mean, it was my fault.
But I thought you weren't supposed to speak of it. And Kylie went home and spilled the beans right away.
It's the weirdest catch 22. You teach your kids about honesty, and then what happens is it comes back to bite you. So from now on, any kids we have, no more honesty. We're done with the honesty. It doesn't pay off. It does not pay off.
Somebody just texted, and this really makes me uncomfortable. What the hell is a Super Bowl?
Really?
How do you not know what a Super Bowl is?
It's like the biggest game every year.
Yeah.
Like we all sit around and watch the Super Bowl.
No.
Sure we do.
You're being sued for saying that. It's just a hard rubber ball that was made. Did Whammo do it?
Whammo, yes.
And you would bounce it and be amazed that it could bounce as high as...
Right.
30 stories.
Yeah, my brothers used to whip that thing at me all the time.
Yeah, that's
that
awful.
Hurt. My brother did that too.
It did hurt, yeah.
You're supposed to chew on them, not throw them at your sisters.
They did that too.
It says it clearly on the... Oh, there is no packaging.
Really?
What am I
thinking?
There
are people out there that don't know what a Super Bowl is.
I would have thought that that was one of those things that everybody would know.
I just found a bunch in my old crayon box that I keep for the grandkids.
Yeah.
I got to bring them in.
Sometimes
we can whip
you don't
them
even...
at each other.
Did you notice this, Mary? Sometimes you don't even buy Super Bowls. They just materialize.
Oh, yeah. They multiply.
Yeah.
When I was young.
No one knows why.
I saved them. I don't know why.
We had a couple over for dinner once, and the girls had Pez dispensers out on the floor. And this is Terry's friend's husband. He picked it up, and he was looking at it from all angles, and he goes, "What is this?" And I go, "It's a Pez dispenser." "A what?" He had never heard of a Pez dispenser before. Yeah. And he grew up here on Earth, like normally you'd go, which solar system are you from where they don't have Pez dispensers?
Yeah, I would
think.
Because those
Super Bowls
are still going on.
Forever.
Still today you can buy Pez dispensers. I
just got Golden Girls Pez dispensers a few weeks ago. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'd be the one guy on planet Earth who would admit to that. Nobody, even if people had done it, they wouldn't say it out loud. I said it out loud.
I don't even know what to say to that. Congratulations.
Jealous. Someone's jealous. All right, we'll take a break and then there's a lot more show. It's Ryan Burrow's birthday, everybody. Take the day off. It's Bill and
Wendy.
I'm doing
the Super Bowl shuffle.
It's WGN.
Like a rocket. Super Bowl. Look, it's almost alive. It bounces and bounces, keeps going and going almost forever. Hurry, try and catch it. Super Ball is a mystery ball of 1,000 bounces, with many more bounces than any ball you ever own. It is a Super Ball. It zigs and it zags. Fast bounce, high bounce. The most amazing ball ever created by science. Energized Super Ball is now in your hands.
It was very exciting to have a Super Ball.
I love the way stuff was sold in the 60s because they said it's mysterious. It's not that mysterious. It's rubber. I mean, you could figure it out pretty easily if you needed to.
You never had a ball bounce as high as a Super Bowl prior to this.
To their credit, they mastered that. Because with most balls, when you'd bounce it, it would just come back to the point where you would start the bounce. But with that one, you would bounce it, and it would go way, way high in the air. But just the way they sold it was so exciting.
It was pretty exciting. It was not a scare tactic, but it was like an excitement
You'll
tactic.
You'll be mystified by the Super Bowl. Yeah. Nobody knows what's in it. It'll bounce 1,000 times.
Wasn't there some space-age polymer in the center of it that would make it bounce so high?
There'd have to be. Now, some of the ones we had, I don't know if most people remember these. They came in your standard variety of colors, but you could also get specialty Super Balls. Like at Oak Drugs in Oak Forest, they sold Super Balls that had different Major League Baseball players' faces inside.
Really?
And those were cool. I mean, they were all cool, but the baseball players.
Was it just like a little?
It was a disc
flat,
of paper,
yes,
in the,
yes,
center.
Yes, I remember that.
And then you'd go, "Oh, Jerry Koosman! How exciting! I'm going to bounce it way up high in the air."
Was that pre-action figure?
It was like almost simultaneous.
Because it's like you have a baseball card, but a baseball Super Bowl.
Oh, you got something.
And there was also one that looked like it had like a little...
The swirly,
yes,
ones. The swirly ones were cool. And then my personal favorite, Wendy, was the glitter Super Bowl that had all the glitter.
You liked the,
yeah,
glitter,
that was
one.
Pretty nice. It was nice. It glowed with everything.
Remember the glow-in-the-dark ones?
Yes.
They really did glow in the dark.
And they also had some that were like 2.5 times the size of your standard Super Bowl. And if your brother threw that at you,
that would hurt.
All bets were off.
That was the really Super Bowl.
Yes. Yes.
I fell for all the glow in the dark stuff. I loved that. I mean, you would just literally hold it almost sometimes too close to the light bulb
right.
to activate it. And
right.
I've brought this up before, and you don't remember it, and I'm shocked and appalled because you remember everything. There was something called lightning bug glow juice.
I don't remember this.
And it was in like a little squeeze bottle, and you could put it on things like if you wanted to put it on your bike or something like that. And I was playing with it in my room, and it spilled, and I must have stepped in it because I was blamed. And they said, you know, did you spill the lightning bug glow juice? And I said, I absolutely did not. And I don't remember who it was. It must have been my mom who said, come here, turn the lights off. You could see my footprints.
Oh, your tracks were everywhere.
So it really worked.
I guess it did.
But I can't believe you don't remember lightning
no,
bug glow juice.
I know we didn't have that. Did you guys have the thing, all right, these were mostly sold around the 4th of July, but you could get them at other times of the year, but at the 4th of July it was a big deal. So you'd hold it in your fingers, and then you'd press up on a lever at the bottom with your thumb, and then it would spin around,
yeah,
and sparks would,
yeah,
shoot out.
It was a la a noisemaker, but it was a spark maker, too.
Spark maker.
I do totally remember,
yeah,
that.
And the ones we had, like, around the 4th of July... It had a red filter on one side and a blue filter on,
yeah,
the other, so that when you hit it, the sparks that would fly out would be very patriotic looking. Much like our forefathers did, I'm guessing, on the first 4th of July.
George Washington loved that.
I'm sure.
His was made out of wood.
Right. His version, Whammo said, a special edition for you, Mr. Washington, the wooden version. No one else has this but you. Don't put it near your teeth. Trust us. It's not good for your teeth.
All right, 847, there's only one text that remembers the lightning bug glow juice.
Where was this was sold? Wherever, what was sold? Where would you get this? In what department?
Probably Kmart or Corvettes. I mean, in the toy department.
But wouldn't there be a fear, like a kid would drink that, right? Wouldn't you be afraid if you bought that for your kid that he or she might take a sip or two?
Well,
seems
I didn't.
Dangerous.
I was the kid, so I didn't, you know.
So there was never a discussion from your mom like, now we'll buy you the bug glow juice, but you can't be drinking it. It's just for decoration.
I don't think parents really paid attention that much back
no.
then. I don't mean that just my mom. I'm sure yours as well. They just, you know, it says on there, do not drink.
Right.
So I think they trust us to know not to drink it.
One of my relatives, when I turned 3, gave me, and now this is a toy that I don't think they make anymore, but it was a wood-burning set.
Oh, my brother had that.
He didn't have it at 3, though, did he? Like, that's
again,
something...
our parents didn't care much about us. 3, you had
3.
It?
3.
Well, you were very advanced.
Not that advanced. Not to be playing with a wood-burning kid at 3.
And it surprises me that you're not like a carpenter or something, since you got such an early
right.
start to that.
Right. Right. No, I'm the whatever the opposite of a carpenter is, that's what I am. I don't know how to do anything. I still have it, because I still don't know how to use it. Still in my closet.
630. It was fun, and I kind of liked the smell. It was the smell of burning wood.
Yeah.
I knocked my 2 front teeth out when I was 11 years old playing with the glow-in-the-dark Super Bowl. I got a cereal box. I was playing with it in a dark bathroom. I bounced it around the room. It landed on the ground. I bent over to pick it up and knocked my 2 front teeth out.
They're dangerous.
On the bathroom counter.
Right.
That's
right.
How he did it, because right. he bent down to get it, and boom.
Yep. That's how it happens.
Boom.
And you hear that noise.
All right. Well, it's so nice to reminisce on this first
sure
day of summer, the longest day of the year, the shortest night, and the best birthday for Ryan Burrow.
Mm.
We have something to give away. We are action-packed today. We've got a full show.
Yep.
We have our last pair of family four-pack to the 12th Annual Blackhawks Convention. Now, it's happening July 26th through the 28th. It's all happening at the Hilton Chicago. It is so much fun. If you're a Blackhawks fan, you will love it. If you're not yet a Blackhawks fan, you will become one after going to the Blackhawks Convention. You get current players, alumni stop by, autograph sessions, and you can take pictures, Q&A panels, exhibits. It really gets you going. So if you would like to call right now, 312-981-7200. Jasmine, I'm sorry to do this to you, but 21, the first day of summer. Let's do that. Caller number 21.
See, Ryan Burrow's birthday too, so
that's
he feels
how old
like
I am, by the way.
Oh, are you this today, as of today? That's excellent, right?
Yep. 312-981-7200. Caller number 21, a family four pack. If you don't win from us, you can visit Blackhawks.com to purchase your passes today. All right, this should be pretty interesting. Ozzy is going to the Blackhawks convention. Hey, Ozzy.
Hello. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Congratulations, Ozzy.
Thank you. Thank you. Long time listening.
Is this a nickname or is this really your name?
No, this is a nickname.
All right, good to know.
It's trying to make it easier for everybody to pronounce my name.
Are you a fan of Ozzy Osbourne?
My son is.
Ozzy and Harriet? The Wizard of Ozzy?
The Wizard of Oz, there you go.
You got them all, Wendy. Well done.
Thank you so much. Well, are you a Hawks fan?
I am.
Well, cool. Have you been to the Blackhawks convention before?
No, I've been to the United Center, but not to the convention.
You will love this. You got a family four pack. Who do you think you're going to take?
My son.
Awesome.
Ozzy, this is a lot of questions. If you want to call an attorney before answering Wendy's questions, you can.
I'm thinking about that.
You should.
I might do that once I hang up.
All right.
All right. Well, have a great time and happy first day of summer to you.
Thank you to you as well.
All right. Thank you. Hang on.
Glad Ozzy won. He works hard, Wendy. He deserves something nice.
Maybe he should bring Ryan Burrow as
for his birthday.
Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill, I had to look this up, but when we were sophomores or juniors in high school,
yes.
1980,
yes.
Iraq invaded Iran. There was a conflict there. We were involved. And now I have a kid about that age who is concerned that there's going to be another Iran war, I guess I should say. So on the line with us right now to make heads and tails of this is Tom Mikaitis. He's a terrorism expert. He's a professor of history at DePaul University. And you also have your new book that is out today, right, Tom?
Yes, that's correct.
And what's
you
it called?
The advanced copies. Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. I've just sent a copy to you.
Oh, sweet. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that, Tom.
No problem.
So 1980 is when the Iran-Iraq conflict happened originally, and now some new things bubbling over in Iran. Talk to us about this.
Well, you know, yes, I remember that. And, of course, one of the dynamics that has happened in the region is that by invading Iraq, we've actually upset the balance of power. Iran and Iraq were always played off against one another. In the days of the Shah, we used Iran as the counterbalance in Iraq. We then used, you know, quite cynically early on, Saddam Hussein against to balance Iran, especially after the Islamic Revolution and the Iran hostage crisis. So, you know, we have a very long established situation here. And you mentioned making sense of it. There's a saying among Middle East experts, if you aren't confused, you really don't understand. I mean, this is a very complicated, very tangled kind of mess that we're in here.
Tom, our relationship, the U.S.'s relationship with the region has always been very tentative. Sometimes we're allies of one or the other, sometimes both, sometimes neither, correct?
That's absolutely true. There have generally been underlying, and there still are to some degree, underlying strategic imperatives, the security and safety of Israel, maintaining access to the supply of oil, reducing terrorism, maintaining some kind of balance of power. Much of that has been thrown into confusion by the events of the last decade.
All right. So the newest, I don't even know what to call it, and I know that people are a little fearful. Are we going to war with Iran? I know an unmanned drone was shot down.
Mm-hmm.
and what the Strait of Hormuz, was it? Is that where it was shot down? I remember
this.
Gulf
of Oman, but they're very closely connected. But yeah, there's a debate as to where it was shot down. I mean, that's part of it.
Okay, and so our president, President Trump, said he tweeted some things, which I find really weird that he's going through Twitter to talk about plans. You know, they will pay or they will regret this. I don't remember his exact tweet. And then there was going to be retaliation, but then he pulled back. Why? Talk to us about this. Make some sense
of it. Well, the thing to keep in mind, this president has never been terribly interested in immersing himself in the details of policy, to be quite honest. He's an image maker, and he's a showman to a very significant degree. So, you know, he really doesn't want a war here. I mean, the thing that's kind of puzzling in some ways is, you know, he is right now the moderator. He's arguing for restraint, and I think the main reason is this is a distraction from his 2020 campaign. He does not want another Middle East war. So he almost gave Iran a pass yesterday when he said, well, you know, this could have been a local individual who made a mistake, which quite honestly is a plausible explanation. Iran claims more territorial water than the international community recognizes. So both sides could be right when they say where the drone was based on their assumptions. The other is, I don't know how centrally integrated the Iranian air defense system is. It's not implausible that a local decision to fire could have been taken. The other is, and this is something that's very hard for us to understand, is this is a country with multiple power centers. Now, I think Americans have a hard time with how much of the world there are alternative centers of sovereignty and power within countries where we're used to that being a much more, you know, centralized sort of thing. So right now, I think there's no desire on the part of most people in positions of power to go to war. The real danger is we could blunder into one when you've got so much hardware and so much tension in a confined space. The risk of something going wrong is not insignificant.
Tom, the story that we're hearing today is that when it came to the counterstrike last night, President Trump asked his advisors how many lives this would be costing, and it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 150, to which he said, no, let's pull back then. This isn't equal to them hitting an unmanned drone. I'm no fan of the president's, but I respect it. If that was the true decision, then I respect that decision. Is it likely that's the way it played out, or is that just a story we're being told?
It is plausible, and if it is plausible, then you're right. I would agree with you. Then I think that was a very good decision. The other thing is, you know, I mean, the person who is chomping at the bit to go to war is John Bolton. I mean, he's been an Iran hawk. He makes no secret of his desire to have regime change, quite honestly, in Iran. The U.S., apparently the general in charge of U.S. Central Command, is also a bit of a hawk on this. But the president has, you know, kind of pulled back. And I think what's curious about a lot of this is all of these incidents have been very, very meticulously conducted to prevent any loss of life. The damage to the tankers was to incapacitate them. They didn't even sink them. And if you can get close enough, whoever did it, by the way, now I think the odds are very high that it was someone within the Iranian regime. But if you can get close enough to put a mine on the side of the tanker, you could have done a lot more damage. But they didn't want to kill anybody, and they didn't want to create a major catastrophe. So this is in some ways a bizarre form of both sides doing strategic communication with very low-level kind of activity.
I'm going to ask probably a stupid question, and I'm apologizing for it in advance. This is why I always lost the game of Risk when we played Risk.
Mm-hmm. But, one of my favorites growing up. But anyway, go ahead.
But boy, do you get the power when you're playing that game. You take over a country. Mm-hmm. You want more. I see where it happens.
Sure.
So there's a drone flying over the sea and checking things out in Iran, and it's shot down. Is that a big deal?
To be quite honest, it's yes and no. It depends on how big a deal we choose to make it. The president has chose to make it less of a big deal than some of his advisors have because he says, look, you know, nobody was killed. It could have been a mistake. Quite honestly, that's true. And, you know, as if what we're hearing is true, that he said this isn't worth taking any lives over, is absolutely right. Especially when it was very close to the internationally recognized line, and as I view it anyway, the Iranians could say, well, we claim a wider territorial waters. This happens all over the world, by the way. There are many countries that claim much greater territorial waters than is allowed by international law.
Why was it there, do you think? I mean, what would we do if there was a foreign drone flying over the United States?
We would quite possibly shoot it down, just as the Russians shot the U-2 spy plane down, during the Cold War. I mean, you know, we do these things all the time. I'm sure there were flyovers in high altitude and satellite and all kinds of surveillance. In this case, you know, I think it quite probably it was not in Iranian territorial waters, as we understand them, and I say that advisedly. But I think, you know, there's no question we're doing flyovers and surveillance and reconnaissance of this entire region on a regular basis. I don't think there's anything unusual about that.
Tom, this was an unmanned drone that was initially shot down. Would the storyline be different if that was a plane that had somebody in it?
Absolutely, especially if the person had been killed. There's no question about that. That would probably have raised the temperature to the point, and the president, in fact, hinted at that any loss of life would be the line in the sand, although, you know, lines in the sand have a way of getting erased very quickly. But, sure. But there's no question that I'm very grateful that didn't happen. But see, that's the concern, is you've got everybody on a bit of a hair trigger. It, you know, it's just doesn't take much for things to get out of hand.
I have to say, as I'm not typically a supporter of President Trump, if it is in fact true that he said it's not equal, there was no lives lost, so let's hold back, I applaud him. I have to say that loud and proud right now.
Yeah, I have to, you know, I have to agree with you. I mean, I think that part of, you know, being an objective analyst on these sorts of things is to not be stridently partisan and to recognize, you know, appropriate behavior when it happens. And if he continues to be and to exercise restraint, I think the worry is there's a mercurialness to his actions. I mean, the tweets say one thing, he says another. But so far, and I think the reasons, as I said, I think there's a very compelling reason, and that is he really sees this as an interference in how he wants to present himself in the 2020 campaign. He's said quite forcefully, no more Middle Eastern wars. And, you know, the risk of trouble throughout the region, if we were to do anything, is not insignificant. They have quite a network of proxies and allies, you know, including Lebanon, Syria, a big time in Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, possibly even the Gaza Strip. Some of our allies would be happy to see us take Iran down a peg. The Emirates and Qatar, probably Saudi Arabia for sure. Israel is not happy with the Iran deal and is happy we pulled out of it, but they don't particularly want a war because they could very easily suffer the worst consequences of it via attacks from Lebanon, trouble in Gaza, and Iran has a lot of intermediate range missiles quite capable of hitting targets in Israel. So, you know, this could get ugly very quickly if this escalated to military action.
We're talking with Tom Mikaitis, terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul University. His new book, Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat, is available today. We'll take a quick break. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings. He is poised and ready in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But until news time, we're talking to a terrorism expert and professor of history at DePaul University, Tom Mikaitis. His new book, Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat, is available now. Tom, a lot of texts are coming in, and again, questions are taken, 312-981-7200. When Donald Trump tweeted, you know, something about Iran, you know, this was a big mistake. Then it was, it came to the forefront that Putin said, you know, any kind of retaliation against Iran would be a bad thing. Does that have anything to do, according to this texter, with maybe why Donald Trump changed his mind?
I don't think so. I think it's more the case that we have to think about audience. We sometimes forget that Donald Trump's tweets are really aimed for his base. And so he's always going to sound more bellicose, more strident in his tweets. And, you know, that if you keep that in that context, that's probably what that is. Yes, I mean, even going all the way back to the Iran hostage crisis, that time the Soviet Union said they would not tolerate or accept the U.S. putting forces into Iran. I mean, in any kind of extended bases or anything like that. So, again, you know, even given the contemporary spin on things, even the other regional players have their long-term strategic interests, which don't change just because the occupants of the Kremlin or the White House do. So, yes, they would not be in favor of the intervention there. And let's be clear, Russia and Iran are indirectly allies in that they're not direct allies, but they both support the Assad regime in Syria. So, you know, they and again, part of what Russia's benefited from with the Trump administration's, you know, isolationist America First policy is that their stature in the region has increased. So, yeah, they're not going to be in favor of it. You know, the only two, look at worst case scenario. Well, I mean, possible scenarios. I very much doubt military action, if it were to occur, would extend much beyond focused pinprick strikes. Now, if Iran escalates beyond that, there's always a danger of getting out of control. But, I mean, don't look for any kind of major invasion here. I mean, the 1,000 troops that we sent is mainly for show. I mean, you know, that's not much. And we do move people in and out of the region on a pretty regular basis.
Tom, do foreign powers, terrorist or otherwise, take into account our election schedule when planning their deeds?
They do. In fact, you know, we know, for example, that if you look at the trade war with China, they, you know, very carefully calculated some of their, you know, their counter tariffs to target red states, particularly agricultural products and so on. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. They're quite savvy on this. You know, non-state actors are a little harder to predict. They tend to go for the symbolic and so on. You know, and this, however, I don't think there's any. This has been building up throughout the first half of 2019, so I don't think it's linked to that. I think what is more behind it is designating the entire the Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization and continuing to screw down on these really unnecessary sanctions to the point where you're backing the Iranians into a corner and causing them serious economic difficulty, because we just before this took away some of the exceptions we allowed for some people to actually buy Iranian oil and so on. So, you know, we really have unnecessarily turned the heat up underneath Iran before this thing, even this latest round of escalation developed.
I only ask because if you know anything about Donald Trump, you know that he's very, very reactionary. So I wonder if they calculate that in, if they're one chess move ahead on something like this, saying, well, he'd want to react, but he can't react because the re-election is a few years away.
Well, you know, I think that would be a dangerous calculation, given as mercurial as he can be. I think, ironically, one of the things that will actually restrain him is when people start saying, well, John Bolton's really the guy calling the shots.
Yeah,
right.
You know, they did that with Bannon, you know, and Bannon was gone. You know, I mean, he is not like the idea that anyone is controlling him. But on the other hand, you know, there is this concern that whoever he talks to last can sometimes, you know, he can then sometimes react, and he's very reactive in the sense that, you know, firing out these tweets and so on. But so far, you know, it's looking you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, I'm as I said, I'm more worried too. You know, if you've got, you know, two people in a crowded bar who are on opposite sides of a sporting event, you know, yeah. you can easily bump into somebody, and if you're looking for a fight, you'll probably find one.
Yep.
That's the kind of scenario that bothers me here.
I'm kind of torn between how I feel about these tweets coming out from President Donald Trump. Half of me yeah. likes it because so I know what's going on, but half of me almost feels like I wish I didn't know some of this stuff.
Well, I mean, there's no question his tweets are problematic because, I mean, he's blindsided his own advisors on a number of occasions with tweets. And that has, you know, that creates a level of uncertainty. But as I said, I think if we look at that, if we look at strategic communication and say, okay, this isn't helpful, but his tweets are really aimed at his Twitter followers and his base. And they love this stuff. They love the tough braggadocio and the whole nine. I mean, notice how he began his rally down in Florida. You know, I'm going to start massively deporting people and so on and so on. Is that really going to happen? Probably not. That is aimed at his base. So some of the more bellicose tweets on the Iran thing are aimed at his base. But that base also doesn't want another war. But anyway. Yeah.
The human Prozac, that's what we like to call you. Again, you've made me feel a little better about conflict with Iran at this point.
It's Tom Mikaitis.
You can tell your son he doesn't have to worry about right, his acid and send off to war.
Good. Tom Mikaitis' new book is called Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. Tom, thank you so much. Appreciate your expertise.
All right. You guys have a nice weekend.
Absolutely. David, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Every Friday, we check in with Alexander Zalbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. We talk about entertainment. We talk about television. Check out Decider.com. You'll like what you read. How are you, Alex? Everything good?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Excellent, excellent.
I love TV again.
Wendy
I got to tell
TV
you
again. You've won her over. How'd you
Hooray,
do it?
I did it.
You
I
did
can
it.
Retire.
It's magic. I want to fold you into a conversation Wendy and I have had on the show this week. There was a show that you talked about with us a couple of weeks ago. It's called Historical Roasts. Jeff mm-hmm. Ross. The Roastmaster General has this show where they roast figures from other time periods, historical figures. They have other historical figures on the board making fun of these people. It is without a doubt the most politically incorrect thing I've ever seen on television, and yet it's really, really funny. How do they pull that off?
You know, I think if you like roasts, it's the sort of thing that you're going to really enjoy, and certainly they're going to go for it. Jeff Ross is somebody, he's the guy behind it. He's also really the linchpin in a lot of the Comedy Central roast series and other things. So not that on the surface a roast of Anne Frank sounds like a good idea, and certainly they've had a huge amount of controversy on that episode in particular, but they brought in top-tier talent. They've got Bob Saget as Abraham Lincoln, Natasha Leggero as Mary Todd Lincoln, John Stamos as John Wilkes Booth on one episode. So it's ridiculous. You know, that's the thing. I think, depending on how you fall, I think you could argue, again, that doing something like Anne Frank, maybe that does take it a little bit too far, but if you're going to go for it, something like an Abraham Lincoln is probably a very safe target where you can get real raunchy and real in your face real quick.
Yes, but given all the choices of Freddie Mercury and Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King,
Muhammad Ali,
Bill suggests, mm-hmm. you know, hey, I'm going to watch it. I listened to Alex. I watched the Anne Frank one. And guess what I watched? The Anne Frank one. And something that you said hits home. If you like roasts, you will like this. Bill, you know that roasts make me so uncomfortable.
Yes, I do know that.
So there's an element of uncomfortability because of the whole roast thing.
Sure.
And then mm-hmm. I wanted it to be funnier to be such a sensitive topic. I thought Fred Willard was fantastic.
As God.
Yeah, he was great. Gilbert was just Gilbert yeah. as Hitler.
Yes.
But what kind of backlash is out over that?
I mean, you can figure out the typical sort of backlash of people saying this is inappropriate, this is insensitive, Anne Frank and the Holocaust is not something you should be joking about. Personally, I would say I agree. That's probably maybe a step too far, like I was saying, versus, say, more, they could have gone further back, right? Things that don't feel quite as sensitive. Something like Abraham Lincoln. Caveat, I'm sure there's somebody out there who's like, whoa, too soon on the whole Abraham Lincoln thing.
Right,
sure.
But for the most part, it's been a little while, and I think you can target that. But it's the same sort of thing as there are certain things that have, even if they're over 50 years old in history, are still very, very sensitive for people because they're still very relevant. So perhaps if they get a second series of that, they can embrace that more. They can go all the way back and do Genghis Khan and other things like that. But I think they wanted to push the envelope a little bit, and in that case, it wasn't successful, and in other cases, maybe it was a little more successful.
Christopher Columbus would be good, because there's a lot of controversy
around him. I don't know if you'll remember this show, Alex. I'm going way, way deep, but PBS used to do a show with Steve Allen called Meeting of the Minds, where he would sit down at a table with four people from history, different eras of history, and they would discuss topics of the day, you know, and this, I mean, this takes that to a whole new level. I have to say, while watching, and I watched the Anne Frank episode, I felt guilty for 30 solid minutes, but I appreciated the fact that in a society that is so politically correct, somebody was saying, yeah, we understand political correctness, we respect it, but we're going in a different direction.
Yeah, I would suggest, this is kind of a weird recommendation, but if you did feel offended by historical roasts, which I completely get and understand, and if you didn't, that's fine too, there's another show on Netflix, which ostensibly is for kids. It's called The Who Was Show, and it's based on a bunch of books. It's about historical figures, and it's a sketch comedy show, but it also includes amazing comedians in it. H. John Benjamin is the narrator. Andy Daly plays the boss of this show, where they're trying to depict historical figures. And it's the same sort of thing where it actually really goes after people sometimes in a surprising way for a kid show. But it's very funny, it's family friendly, and it talks about history in a very different way. But again, if you felt historical roasts too much, maybe check that out, particularly if you have kids, but maybe even if you don't.
The Who Was Show.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Here's another show with some controversy behind it. I know this wasn't on our list of topics, but I would love to get your take on this. Many, many people have signed a petition saying to Netflix, hey, you got to stop running this show, Good Omens. It's very, very upsetting. Come on, Netflix, stop showing the show. The problem is it's not on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was over 20,000 people who talked about the show. This is Good Omens, 6-episode series on Prime Video, I should specify, based on a book by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, and it deals with an angel and a demon teaming up to stop the apocalypse. It's very subversive in terms of the way that it deals with God and angels and demons and everything, so you could see how certain religious sections would be pretty upset about it. But as you mentioned, hilariously, they demanded that Netflix take it off, and both Netflix and Prime Video responded. Netflix basically saying,
I've got it right here. It's Amazon Prime Video tweeted this because I saw it. Hey, Netflix, we'll cancel Stranger Things if you cancel Good Omens.
Right. And Netflix also responded saying, okay, we won't make any more episodes of Good Omens, we promise.
That's so funny.
It's hilarious. I try not to concentrate too much on these fan petitions because they always seem so wrongheaded. But this one was so off the mark, it went around to being hilarious.
Alex, years ago, it was standard. If you put out a show, if you were broadcasting a show that could potentially offend somebody, there was always a disclaimer at the beginning of every episode or sometimes during a commercial break where they'd say, we just want to warn younger or more sensitive viewers of what's about to take place. So now, with the market broadened so much by cable and satellite channels, what do they do to get that message out that we're putting out a show, it's not for everybody? How do you let people know that?
It's self-policing, really, by network, and it varies. You know, broadcast, traditional broadcast, has its own standards. But for the most part, the cable networks agree on their own what they want to do. You know, Sci-Fi made a decision with a bunch of their shows to say, hey, you know what, we're just not going to bleep cursing anymore because it hurts the show when broadcasting it. So you have shows like The Magicians where people are cursing all the time. Same thing with AMC, makes a little bit of a decision to allow each of their shows to do a harsh curse once per season. Oh. And when you get to streaming, there's no real standards and practices. They try to leave it up to the creators. Certainly if something goes too far, they're going to respond about it in some way. But for the most part, it's very much the wild, wild west, other than the fact that you can look at the episodes and you can see up in the top left corner, usually, there's some sort of note about the content. Now, sometimes that leads to really huge problems, like with 13 Reasons Why, which very clearly took on teen suicide, but didn't have any warnings on it, and people got extremely upset, and I think for good reason. So then they went back to that program, and they added a warning to all of the episodes after it had already aired for about a couple of days. But like I said, it's up to the network, it's up to the creators, and it's a little all over the place right now.
The voice you're hearing is that of Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. We'll take a quick break and then continue our discussion. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Alexander Zalbin's here. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. Really great website if you're a fan of television or entertainment in general. A bunch of shows to talk about with you, Alexander. Let's start out with the show Dark, season 2 on Netflix. I have never heard of Dark. What is it?
So this was a huge sensation, I think, in particular for sci-fi fans, when it was released about 2 years ago on Netflix. It's a German time travel thriller. It's incredibly complex, incredibly deep, but the characters are very, very good. There were a couple of episodes, as I mentioned, 2 years ago. It's finally back today on Netflix. Our reviewer, Kayla Cobb, has checked it out. She said it's fantastic. If you're a fan of the series, just be prepared to really concentrate. Not only do you have to watch it with the subtitles, but also there's multiple time eras and people are their own father and all of these other crazy time travel things. But it's very well done, great acting, well worth checking out.
When you say people are their own father, you're referring to Woody Allen, aren't you?
Yep, he's in the show and he does a great job.
Good. What is Legion? Is that the X-Men Legion?
That is the X-Men Legion. It's entering its third and final season on FX Monday, June 24th. It's at 10 p.m. This is absolutely one of my favorite shows on the air. It's created by Noah Hawley, the guy who also rebooted Fargo for FX. Mm-hmm. Nobody watches Legion. It's very tangential to the X-Men movies and series. There's kind of mentions of Professor X and other characters, but mostly it's an examination of mental illness, what makes us a hero, what makes us a villain. It's unlike anything on TV. One second, it'll be kind of a mutant action show. The next second, it'll be a musical. The next second, it'll be something else. You've got to see it to believe it. And really, the visuals there, the acting, unlike anything else on TV, I love it. And I'll also mention, if you're a fan of Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey and Beauty and the Beast and other things, he's the star of the show as the title character, and he's great.
The Hills is coming back to TV. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That depends on your perspective, I would have to say. So that's also on Monday on MTV, The Hills, New Beginnings. The thing that's curious to me about it is The Hills initially was a huge step forward for reality TV. It was the first show that really took reality TV and gave it a sheen, stopped treating it like a documentary and more like a docudrama, which is what most things on TV are now. And in a way, The Hills coming back, the format has changed. So for the first time, they're going to have confessionals similar to more modern reality shows. They're also missing some of the returning cast members. And for some inexplicable reason, including Misha Barton, star of The OC, is going to be on it.
Oh.
So the whole thing is very confusing, very weird. If you're a fan of The Hills, you'll get to see a bunch of these folks back together, so that's probably the appeal. But we'll have to see how it turns out.
Were you a fan of that show?
No, I didn't watch it.
No?
Would I have liked it?
I don't think so.
Oh.
It was very cringy, you know? Just a lot of people trying too hard to be pretty.
Yeah, The Hills was a response to the real world and role rules, is the way that I always looked at it, where those were quote-unquote more real.
Yeah.
This one was trying to say, okay, shows like The OC, these are more popular. How can we do that, but with real people?
Right.
It was never really my thing, but it was a huge sensation when it came out.
I got to get one thing in here, because you know how excited I am about Big Brother. Bill rolls his eyes, but the ratings on this are really good.
Yeah, they're always big.
So what do you got? That returns.
Yeah, it's coming back on Tuesday at 8 p.m. and presumably being on 24 hours a day all the time if you have CBS All Access, and that's all you're going to do and not sleep for weeks. They revealed a couple of details about it. They revealed the full cast. The one that I think was drawing the most attention, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think it's an alumni of The Bachelorette's ex-girlfriend who was not on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette is one of the house guests. So that might be interesting if it's Luke Pell, I guess, is the name of the guy, and her name is Holly Allen. So that doesn't mean a lot to me, but I think it's very exciting.
Does that mean anything to you, Wendy? Do you know who that is?
No. I just know. I think there are a couple of people from Chicago that are on this show.
Yeah. Did you ever see the episode?
And they also showed off the house. The house has a camping theme to it, so presumably that'll play it in some way. It'll make s'mores, but it'll be dangerous s'mores, I guess.
Did you ever see that one episode of Big Brother where those people didn't get along? Did you ever see that episode? It's a really good one.
Hey, go ahead and make fun of it. I mean, you haven't watched it, so you really can't judge. And that's what I do. I judge when I watch it.
Yep. A big week for Emma Thompson. She's got a movie out in theaters late night, but she also has a TV show on HBO called Years and Years. This one snuck up on me. What's Years and Years?
This is a six-episode series. It's a BBC production, but it's going to be on HBO Monday, June 24th at 9 p.m. It's created by Russell T. Davies, who is the guy who revamped Doctor Who. He also created Queer as Folk and a ton of other things. It takes place towards the end of 2019, Emma Thompson is a politician. She's sort of Margaret Thatcher-esque. Something happens, and then it follows her and her family over the course of the next 15 years. So it actually goes through the future. It broadcast already in the BBC, and the UK audiences loved it. They thought it was fantastic, really interesting, really well-done drama. The other thing that's interesting about it is it continues, and this is very wonky, but it continues HBO's Monday night strategy. Traditionally, they've been the 9 p.m. Sundays when you have to check out HBO, but they did very, very well with Chernobyl over the past couple of weeks.
That was
awesome.
And
now they're going into this. Yeah, which seems like it's going to do well as well. So they're really pushing into other nights. Less nights, more nights spent watching HBO is a good thing for them.
Would you categorize Chernobyl as a surprise hit? Wendy just finished it and loved it. Mm-hmm. It did way better than I thought it would do. I thought everybody kind of knew the story, but they came up with angles mm-hmm. nobody knew.
Yeah, it was definitely a surprise hit and a huge hit for HBO, which they've been pushing really well. It didn't do Game of Thrones numbers or anything like that, but it did extremely well. It did extremely well on streaming as well. And it had this pattern that we see with a lot of HBO shows where it actually built week over week, which means that people aren't just returning, but they're telling people, oh, you have to watch this and you have to watch it live.
A listener, Pat, wants to talk to you, Alex. Are you taking phone calls?
Absolutely.
All right, good news.
Oh, I just hung up on him.
Oh.
Dang.
Oh,
all right, Pat, we're going to get him right back on. Jasmine's going to call him right now. He did suggest a show. Jasmine.
Do we lose the caller, too?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, God. All right, we got to call Alexander back. That's my fault. I was not prepared to take a phone call.
He last week talked about a show on HBO called Euphoria, which is a show about teens and drug use. And
lots of sex
problems,
and nudity.
Lots of sex, yeah.
And you didn't watch it?
No. What? You automatically thought I'd watch it because it had sex and nudity
in
it?
Well, yeah.
No.
It's supposed to be sexy time.
I DVR'd it. I'll wait till my family's away.
Alex, I am so sorry. I had a caller, and I messed that up. It was about.
Oh, no problem. I just really didn't want to talk to Pat at all.
All right, Pat's back. Listen, now hang on. Give me a second. I will do this correct this time.
Okay.
Pat is right there. Pat, Alex, go ahead. Sorry, guys.
Good morning, everybody. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Pat. What's up?
First of all, I'm a little concerned about the language on some of the shows on ABC, NBC, etc.
Yeah.
I have grandkids that are, fairly young, and they do watch a lot of TV. And unfortunately, some of the language is really way over the top for young kids. Don't they have anybody watching these shows and censoring them at all anymore?
What do you think, Alex?
I mean, they absolutely do, Pat. I mean, they have standards and practices, so they check things out. But the thing is that mores are changing so that there is some language that pushes the envelope. You have the 10 p.m. hour, used to be where you had harsher language. Then it was the 9 p.m. hour. Now it's the 8 p.m. hour. It's just kind of the progression of time and how things are happening. You can always look at the guide on these things, and they'll tell you whether there is going to be language. But as you mentioned, it's changing and it's progressing. So what wasn't acceptable 10 years ago is going to be acceptable.
Well, I grew up in the days of Laura and Rob Petrie and the two men.
They hardly ever swore on that show.
No, they never even slept together.
Right, right.
I don't even know how they got Richie.
Right, so true.
But anyway, sometimes I see these shows and I think, wow, I must be really ancient because I just get really shocked at some of the stuff. And yet I've gone to movies, you know, in the theater, and I figure those are different from the TV shows because kids have access to it, you know.
Well, we appreciate you calling.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Now hang up on Pat.
I did.
All right. Alex, you talked about a show called Yellowstone. That's the Kevin Costner show. I had never seen it before, and I watched an episode last week. I have to say I enjoyed it. I wasn't sure who was who. Everybody on the show is brooding. Everyone's in a bad mood. I'm not sure why. But, boy, was that violent.
Yeah, it is. It's a very violent show. It's a very dramatic show. If it helps, they're all named Yellowstone, so you can kind of go from there.
Thank you.
No, they're not. I'm kidding. But yeah, it's very popular. Like I think we talked about last week, it's on the Paramount Network, so not a lot of people know how to find it or watch it. But regardless, people are watching it, and I think a lot of that has to do with Kevin Costner, has to do with the family drama, and it's doing extremely well.
Yeah, I liked what I saw. I need to go back and realize what happened to these characters prior to what I watched. But everybody was in a bad mood. Everybody had a grudge. And they had a very inventive scene with a bull in a bar that I had never seen before. That's all I can say. I don't want to say any more. But a bull was very angry to be put in a bar with angry cowboys.
Listen, you'd be in a bad mood, too, if a bear was constantly trying to steal your picnic basket.
Point well taken. Yes, so true. Fun to talk to you, as always, Alexander. We're looking forward to this again next Friday. Hope you have a great week.
All right, you too. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
that's
Alex.
Alexander Zalbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. Feel the rain on your skin. No
one else can feel it for you. Only you can let it in. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, and I watch WGN TV news pretty much every way.
24 hours a day.
It's pretty close to it. Yeah. Jim puts it on in the morning when he hangs out with the dog, so sure. Kona's a big fan of Channel 9, and it's always on our television, and I see this woman doing a lot of reporting all over the place. Marcella Raymond, how are you?
Hey, guys.
Great to talk to you, Marcella.
Yeah, good to talk to you too again under different circumstances, but
yes,
from the last time. But
last time we spoke to you, a viewer sent you a mean letter and posted something on Facebook. Yeah. And there will be haters everywhere, and people feel they can just criticize anyone. But now I read on Robert Feeder's column that you are officially been diagnosed with suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
That is correct.
I am not shocked, Marcella.
No, I just didn't think it would be, you know, PTSD just is, I don't know, I guess I was diminishing maybe a little bit of what I was feeling or what was going on, you know, just thinking more it was depression or something. But, you know, you think of PTSD as, you know, military vets suffering from that, and which is so horrific, and first responders who see such, oh, my God, awful things, and you know, things that just burn in your brain, and nurses, ER nurses, and nurses who are in hospice, and doctors who are ER doctors, and just see people coming in such horrible circumstances. So I'm like, you know, wait a second. You know, I'm a reporter. How is this? How can this be the diagnosis? But, you know, the more I figured out, the more I talked to my doctor and my therapist, and I'm being very open about this. The more I realize that, you know, it happens to people in other circumstances too. And, So that's my case. I want to
make sure people know, if you didn't read Rob Peter's article, it's believed that your PTSD comes directly from working with these darker stories over the years. You've accumulated all these horrible stories, and you've covered them for WGN, and that's what led to this, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really, you know, you could probably go back to my childhood and some things that happened to me then and say, well, that's maybe why I'm responding to this. And I don't know if that's really the case. I mean, I think it's more of just the daily bombardment of human suffering and just horror that we witness and that we're thrown in the middle of. And, you know, it's like people don't see that part of it. You know, so that's why I'm just trying to have them understand that, you know, we all have something, and this is kind of what led me to this diagnosis, you know, because it's not what you think it is.
Right.
You know.
And you mentioned, I was just talking to Bill off the air about this. Originally, we think of PTSD as, you know, military people and, you know, suffering the after effects of war. Now we're getting it with kids after their high schools and elementary schools have been shot up. And even just as a viewer, Marcella, watching the stories that happen these days, I mean, even that takes a toll. And you are in the trenches, basically, for these journalistic stories.
Yeah, it's, and if I start to get a little emotional, it's because it's still really raw, but.
Sure. Absolutely. And
you're not there when, you know, you don't, sometimes we, you know, we see the aftermath of the blood and all that kind of stuff, and that really, you know, gets to you as well, but you're there when the people are at their most grievous times in their lives. And, you know, it's hard to just stay on the outside looking in. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yes,
because
this becomes part of
for them so much, right?
So you think about it, it's not like you can just unplug the microphone and go home. These weigh on you. And I'm telling you, you coming forward with this PTSD diagnosis, there are going to be other reporters that have realized why they've been feeling the way they've been feeling as well. So I really applaud your bravery and your courage to come out and say, yeah, this job has affected me.
Yeah, and I've gotten a lot of responses from reporters all over the country. And they're like, I get it. You know, maybe they haven't been diagnosed specifically, but, you know, it takes its toll on them too. Like this one woman told me that she was covering a trial of a man who killed 5 children, and she's like, when I was done with that, I said I needed time off, you know. And she's like, I felt guilty, you know, like I was letting my colleagues down because I needed to go do something else. So I felt like, you know, suck it up, you can do it, what's wrong with you? And I mean, it's a very real emotional response and psychological response. And I think people need to understand that. And I think that, you know, bosses need to understand that too. And news organizations need to understand that, yes, it's your job, but covering murders and tragedies and fatal fires day in and day out really takes its toll.
This obviously didn't happen overnight. This was an accumulation of years of reporting. Was there a time, Marcella, where you just said, wow, I've crossed into a new level that I'm just not accustomed to? Did something happen like that?
I wrote, I have a public Facebook page called Marcella A. Raymond, where I'm telling my story. And on that page, I don't know if you guys saw this one, but there was, like, I call it my mini nervous breakdown. Like, the first time I was I was diagnosed with PTSD twice. And the first time I don't think I really, really understood. And I knew that, you know, I kept thinking of a plan B, like, I got to get out of this. I can't do this anymore. And I was working early morning, so I was sleep deprived too. So I was thinking, well, maybe that's part of why I'm so, you know, affected by these stories. But we cover, you know, overnight, you cover crime all the time because stuff happens at night.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you come in the early mornings, you're the first reporter in. And so, you know, that's what we were doing a lot. And so I just, long story short, I had to go to the house of a soldier who had just been killed in Fort Hood. This was back in 2009 when that psychiatrist just opened fire and it was just a mass shooting in Texas. And I had to go to his house, and his brother was there. And, you know, that's just when I had my first, like, massive panic attack. And I'd never had that before. And, like, I just started sobbing. And I mean, it was just, it's on my Facebook page, but it was just, and I was like, I'm done. That's it. I'm done. And I just took some time off and eventually had to come back because it was the recession and nobody was hiring and I'm a single mom. And I thought, okay, you know, this would be better because I'm not working the morning shift. And, you know, after 10 years, now I realize, okay, it still affected me.
So what's next for you, Marcella? You mentioned your doctors, you mentioned your therapist. Mm-hmm. Again, mm-hmm. We thank you for being so open and honest about this. What's next? Therapy, maybe medication. Are you going to continue to work because you do such an incredible job?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I, you know, to be very blunt, I see a psychiatrist. I have a therapist who's actually still a Chicago cop. He teaches now. He's not on the street anymore, but he counsels first responders. And it was interesting because he said to me, you know, you're my first journalist. I never really realized. So he gets it. You know, he's been out there. He's had a partner who killed herself. He was friends with Officer Jimenez, who died in the Mercy Hospital shooting, which was another story that just broke me. And so he gets it. So, yeah, so I'm doing all that kind of stuff. The station's been great in helping me do more feature kind of things and anchor for CLTV. And, you know, but eventually I'm going to have to go back out there, and I just have to figure out, like, what my next step is going to be. But I can't just keep ignoring it.
You're like a first responder, though. Reporters yeah. that get, I'm not
true.
Kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You guys get there before, and so we can get the story, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've seen some, you know, horrific things. I mean, just one thing, I was doing a story all morning, and it was dark, and when the light sun came up, I realized I'd been standing in a pool of blood that had soaked into the concrete.
God.
And I was like, oh, okay, great. You know, like,
yeah,
those are the things that stick in your head.
Sure.
You know, this was someone and I'm standing in his or her blood. You know, it was just like, what? You know,
Marcella,
you just can't believe it.
I'm sure you've thought about this, but I'm curious as to what your take on this is. What can stations do differently? What can news services do differently? Everybody has to cover these news stories, and the way mm-hmm. to do it is to send people like you out to cover the stories. But what do you
right.
think they can be or should be doing differently to prevent this sort of thing?
Well, you know, there are times, like, I know, you know, I'll either be talking to some of my friends and they're telling me how this one story or this constant, you know, a different murder every day is really getting to them, or I can see on the air, like, so-and-so is covering these horrific stories every day. So we'll be in we're in an editorial meeting at 11 o'clock every morning. And, you know, they try to dole out the stories and who's going to do what, really based on just schedules and stuff. Nothing really, or, oh, you've been covering this, so let's have you do it again. And, you know, they'll say whatever story, and I'll be like, I'll take that. Because I haven't done any murders lately.
Yeah.
And I want to take the burden off some of my colleagues. So I think what would be really good if we as an organization realized, you know, what everybody is doing and not just what's convenient and what's fit in the right, you know, slot or whatever, but just realize that, you know, this person's been covering horrific stuff all week. So let's take it off her or him and give it to someone else for right now.
Have them cover the Rolling Stones or something, you know?
Yeah, you know,
switch
I think that would be a good way to balance it. Yeah, and then, you know, my boss always checks on us, like, are you okay? And, you know, I know you've been covering a lot of bad stuff. But I think we, as reporters, also need to speak up and, you know, not just suck it up and say, look, I can't do this right now.
Was the decision to come forward, was that a tough decision for you or not?
You know what? It was weird because I thought, you know what? This has to be told because I wanted to, it's therapeutic for me too, but I also wanted to tell people that they weren't alone. And no matter what they were, you know, whether it was a murder or whether, I mean, think about how many people live in, you know, blighted neighborhoods that, you know, they've got two family members murdered. This like horror happens to them constantly. And I'm sure they're all suffering from PTSD.
Sure.
You know, how do you not? How do you sit in your house and hear gunshots and not be affected by it?
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to kind of tell my story about it. And I don't know. I didn't really think much about it. And now I'm kind of like, with all the attention, I'm sort of like, oh, crap.
No.
You know, what did I do? Like, I don't know. I sometimes just feel weird sometimes. Not like I don't want to tell my story, but I just, I don't know. You know, oh, you're so brave. Oh, you're my hero. I'm like, no, I just feel compelled to tell a story. And I hope that everybody, you know, can relate.
I think you're going to help a lot of people. I really do.
No, I hope so. Really hope so.
And somebody has texted, and I totally get this, surprised it hasn't come up before, and I kind of am, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's time.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's time that, you know, and people see us sometimes as vultures, like, and sometimes I feel like that, but you're shoving a microphone in someone's face. Well, I never, you know, unless it's some, you know, like, alderman who's been accused of something, yeah, then I'm going to shove a microphone in your face.
Right.
When you're walking past me, but
a grieving family member, yeah.
Never, 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 never. I mean, I always come up, and I am always compassionate, and I am always understanding, and I, you know, I feel what they're going through because I'm a parent as well, and that's probably part of my issue is because I put myself in their shoes, and that's what makes it even more difficult. You know, I don't have my reporter hat on. I have my mom hat on. And that's...
you can never take that off. You notice that,
no,
Marcella.
It's so hard.
I
and
know.
So, you know, if someone does not want to talk to me, I will never bother them again. But if they do, then sometimes I think it's therapeutic for them as well. I am just very, you know, cautious about any of that. So I don't want people to think that we're just, you know, throwing microphones. No, we don't do that. We don't do that. And if we get an interview, we get it. If there's all of us there, we're doing it because we don't want this person to have to do five different interviews for different stations. So we all work together. We're like, let's go try to get this and make it as easy as we can on this person if they want to talk to us. You know, so I think people really need to understand that, too, that this isn't about just getting the story. This isn't, I mean, this is about humanity, and we're all humans. And I think we all need to understand how difficult it is for each of us to do our jobs at times.
We're totally behind
you. We're behind you all the way. I don't know if you'll remember this, but right after 9/11, David Letterman had Dan Rather on, and Dan Rather was telling the story of what he experienced during 9/11, and he broke down and he started to cry, and he apologized.
Yeah.
And David Letterman said, don't apologize. You're a newsman, but you're also a human being, and you're living that right now.
Yeah. And 9/11, I can't even imagine having to actually be there. I mean, I can't imagine. I don't know that I could do it. But it's true. You think of Dan Rather as this tough guy, and he's so wonderful and has all these emotions. And if he didn't, he would just be a robot. And,
sure.
Or there would be something really seriously wrong with him that he's not able to connect like that.
But I think people see that about you right now is that, yes, for years and years, you've been on these stories that are just horrendously difficult stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you think, you know, you said you second-guessed yourself, don't second-guess yourself. We're all behind you on this.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely, and we'll be looking for you. I'm telling you, WGN TV News is pretty much on 24/7 at our house. Really appreciate
it. Well,
really appreciate you talking to us, Marcella.
Thanks. Thanks for asking. I think it's important to get the word out, too.
It is. It definitely is. Thanks, Marcella. Have a good weekend.
Have a good day. Thanks. All right. Okay. Bye.
Marcella Raymond from WGN News.
Big fan of hers.
Yeah.
Coming up, we'd like you to invite you to tune into WGN Extra. You can hear us talk about what's hot and what's cold. It's all sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. It's the 60 Minute Man.